Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, February 10th, 2022. As always, we are grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to help turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself absolutely free. It's a simple PDF file. You don't even have to get put on a mailing list. Click the link, download the file, print it out, copy it off, and use it as often as you'd like, absolutely free. You can also go to your App Store, either Google Play or Apple App Store, and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you click on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often, because that usually leads to comments or questions or testimonials. And if you have any of those that you would like to share with us, please give us a call, 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and it'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. Or you could send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. You can also email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And if we get your comments or questions through email, we will address them in the show, and then you can listen to your answer in the archive if you're not able to be here live on any given day, or if that's why you're not, just pressing 1 to raise a hand. So we're in the process of reading through the Way of Mastery. And the Way of Mastery is what I refer to as a kinder, gentler version of the Course in Miracles. And last year in this show, we read through the Course in Miracles lessons. And did almost all of them. And this year, as we're working slowly, methodically through the Way of Mastery, we've covered the first 2 lessons several times. And so far, in the days of this week, we've moved into lesson three. And lesson three is the pivotal lesson that lets me connect the Mind Shifters Academy, Dr. Michael Rice's Reality Management Worksheet, the Kabor's Manuscript, the Course in Miracles, and tie it all into the Way of Mastery, because lesson three is titled The Power of Forgiveness. And the definition of forgiveness in this chapter is, forgive means to choose to release another from the perceptions I have been projecting upon them. It is therefore an act of forgiving one's self, in other words, dismantling from oneself one's false perceptions and projections. It is the dismantling of any denial of the first axiom. The first axiom is, I create my experience. I've never experienced anything that wasn't my own creation. And it says here, the more I dismantle my false perceptions, the more I get to see the purity of my own consciousness. So we've read the first four pages and read them two or three times, and then we started into the next section, which talks about the veil of projection. And this is such a critical part of this work. I'm going to go back and just reread the last two pages again. What is projection? Projection occurs when there has first been denial within yourself. Denial of what? Denial of the first axiom in this work, that nothing you experience has been caused by anything outside of you. Dr. Michael Rice talks about this, and he says, his definition of denial in his work is any time I think or speak as though someone or something outside of me is responsible for my emotions, my reactions, my experience. And I don't know about you, that sounds exactly like what we're getting from the Way of Mastery Lesson 3, where it says projection occurs when you have first been in denial of the first axiom, that nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you. So if I'm in denial of that, I'm thinking or speaking as though someone outside of me is causing my upset. Projection is an act in which you psychically try to throw out of your own ownership everything that you've judged as being despicable or unworthy of you. This is something you do not want. And so you will project it into your mind's image of somebody else. You will throw it up and out and let it land on the image you're creating of whatever or whoever happens to be nearby. Projection is the effect of the denial of the first axiom that I have given you. It is the denial of the truth that, quote, nothing you experience has been caused by anything outside of you. Projection is an attempt to insist that reality is other than it was created to be. Projection is the attempt to insist that you are not powerful. Projection is the attempt to insist that you are a victim of circumstances. Projection is the attempt to insist that you are in a world that can actually do things to you and cause you to make decisions that you would not have made otherwise. That is always denial, and it is a lie. Again, projection is the denial of the first axiom of truth, and you've mastered that denial quite well. When you project onto another, you will then believe that your anger and your hatred is justified. And once you believe your anger or hatred is justified, you will be able to rationalize any level of abuse. In fact, the legal system in our culture merely is, it's the act of taking projection and the need to judge and making it socially acceptable so that you don't need to be concerned about your brother or your sister, your fellow traveler, your fellow being of brilliance and light. You don't need to be concerned about them and the fact that whatever they just did that might have been hurtful, that might have been immoral or illegal or fattening or insulting or is a cry for help and healing. But if I'm in the projection business, I look on them and say they're horrible, they're ugly, they're despicable, they deserve to be punished. And I don't need to connect with them as another being of brilliance and light who has either only temporarily forgotten or yet to discover their brilliance. So our legal system is a cover-up, is an escape, is a product of making denial socially acceptable. So our legal system is a way for us to justify punishment. And yet punishment is only the insane attempt to convince the punisher, the evil, whatever I want to call it, is not in me, but it's in somebody outside of me. Imagine then a society in which the prevalent legal view is simply that your brother or sister is an aspect of yourself. Imagine how it would be to live in a world where if you would help yourself, you must help them. Meeting every cry for help and healing with forgiveness, love, and support. Forgiveness meaning the dismantling of a false perception that says something about what they did means they aren't worthy of love. Something about what they did is causing your negative emotion. Forgiveness meaning to dismantle the false perception. Can you imagine, even for a moment, what it would be like to live in such a society? How would it be different than the world you see now? We keep getting brought back to the truth. There's a quote often attributed to Gandhi that says, you've got to be the change that you want to see in the world. And here's that truth again. If you would have things be different, it must begin with you. For the way to heal the world is not by seeking to change what is on the outside. But the way to change the world is by first changing what is on the inside. When that change has occurred, you will become a conduit for an energy that knows how to use your gifts and how to place you in just the right situations. And once that happens and your conduit is open and clear, a great power will work effectively through you. And it's that power alone that knows how to heal the world. There are many that would love to march for peace by angrily attacking those who make war. However, if you would create peace in the world, you must be at peace within yourself. You're only, always and forever, extending your energy of creation through whatever filter you choose. Your mind energy is a creative force. You cannot turn that off. You have dominion over whether or not you focus it on something positive or something negative. And when you focus it on something negative, you're creating more of that. When you focus it on something positive, loving, gratitude-based, appreciation, compassion-based, you're creating more of that. It's an energetic universe. You start resonating energy, and it resonates and vibrates out away from you, and it has an impact. Projection is an act of trying to get rid of what you do not want to own within yourself. Projection is the effect of the denial of truth. Projection colors your brother or sister with the very energies that you would judge negatively within yourself. How can you begin to break the pattern of projection? How can you allow the bridge of forgiveness to be built? Well, the answer to that is actually quite simple. However, it does require your commitment. Awakening requires vigilance and discipline. I have said to you many times that the world you see is nothing more than the effect of the thoughts you have held within the mind. Therefore, awakening requires the act of vigilance and discipline. The discipline to cultivate, there's that word again, to work with, to stay focused upon, to be aware of moment to moment, to cultivate a way of living in which you observe your own thoughts, in which you listen to the words that are coming out of your own mouth. It's a way of cultivating, a way of observing and listening in which you therefore observe the feelings that are evoked within your body. And you observe the reactivity that you are creating that seems to be your own, and to see these things as innocent and simply self-caused. Sin, S-I-N, self-induced nonsense. If it's negative, it's nonsense. If it's negative, it's self-induced. It's a false perception. It's an error of thought. When next something is reflected to you by the world that seems to cause you to become angry or causes you to be in judgment, stop right where you are and look. Not with the judgment, not with the anger, not with judgment and anger at your judgment, but with innocence and honesty. Take a breath, step back, soften, turn the focus in on yourself. Listen to your own thoughts. Feel the feelings you're creating. Listen to the words coming out of your own mouth. Observe the feelings that are evoked within your body. Observe the reactivity that you're about to do. Take a breath, turn the focus inside and say, oh, I see that I'm judging someone. That is an interesting cloud passing through the sky of my awareness. I wonder if I might be able to make another choice. It feels kind of tight or tense. I don't really like the anger. I'm tired of raging. I'm tired of always being in the feeling of overwhelm or confusion or emotional hurt. I wonder if I could create differently. I wonder if I might make another choice. Now, as soon as we say that, the mind will tell you, yeah, but this person just broke into my house and stole my stereo. Of course I have a right to be in judgment. I have a right to feel angry. The law says that I can blah, 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 blah. And that's all true at one level of existence, at the level of your what you call your culture or your civilization and the rules of your government, local, state, federal, etc. It's all true that you could justify your anger, and you can find hundreds if not thousands of people who will stand with you on the side of the judgment you've made and tell you it's perfectly justified. But I say unto you, your anger is never justified. Just breathe into that. Just notice what wants to come up against that. I remember years ago, about 18 years ago, I started doing the support group that's on Tuesday nights. And we would have, on a regular basis, we'd have some people come in, and they were so attached to their anger. And they would formulate a perception that I was trying to tell them their anger is wrong or bad and they need to dismantle all of their anger. And they would want to get into vehement verbal arguments. Some looked like they were on the verge of jumping up to punch something. So this work acknowledges that most of us have been raised in a culture and conditioned to certain thought processes. It says, it does not mean you will not experience it. You will experience your anger. But I say unto you, anger is never justified. It can be turned into a very productive tool. I can turn it into an alarm system. I can turn it into part of the process that wakes me up to take a breath and turn the focus inside and question with that childlike innocence how I am creating a perception in my mind that wants to justify anger. But in this work, we are encouraged, we are invited to stop fooling ourselves into believing that there is validity to our anger and the vengeance we want to do to someone. It says, when someone has just broken into your home and taken your stereo equipment or some other idol that you have loved, you cherish above all else, when that happens, what if you understood that in that very moment, you had the power to remember that all events are neutral? Every event simply, merely provides you with a chance to choose love. In this moment, you could choose to extend the energy of creation, love, acceptance, gratitude, appreciation, compassion, sensitivity, patience. You could choose any of those in this moment. What if you literally chose the insane way, according to your world, this would be insane, and look upon the one who's just done that act as a fellow being of brilliance and light, who's either temporarily forgotten or yet to discover their brilliance, and this is nothing but a cry for help and healing? What if you chose to look upon them as one who does not know how to live in the world without being of the world? What if in this moment you had the potential to role model for them what it's like to live in the world but not be of the world? What if you had the chance to role model for them the experience of having worked at a job and saved your money and been a good householder and purchased this stereo and you take great delight in your music, and when it's taken from you, you have the ability to look at all events are neutral and to look at this particular event of someone stealing your stereo as an opportunity to choose love, to demonstrate what it's like to live as love in the moment, to choose to see your brother and sister as a being of brilliance and light, and when they do something like breaking into your house or stealing your stereo, they're simply doing what would be a cry for help and healing, or a demonstration of the fact that they have forgotten how to live in the world without being of the world, or they've never learned that skill yet. And you could model it for them. You could become the change you want to see. What if you look upon them as one who does not know how to live in the world without being of the world, who does not know the way to self-forgiveness, to dismantling the false perceptions that would motivate them to do something hurtful to themselves or someone else? Someone who does not know the truth of the light that lives within them? They don't see themselves as a being of brilliance and light, or they've temporarily forgotten it. What if you look upon them as someone who does not recognize their own great power to create whatever they want in a way that is not hurtful to anyone else? And if you look upon them that way and you choose to act from love, from your true nature, with compassion, with patience, with understanding, what if you chose to look upon them and act from compassion rather than reactivity? You chose to act from choice rather than the conditioned programming of your culture, striking out at them, focusing on the goal that you want. I want my stereo. I want to be able to listen to my music when I want, how I want. What if I canceled that goal and asked to be shown what's underneath my perception of pain and fear and sadness? The book goes on to say, this begins in simple ways. To set the stage, I want you to remember that time has been given to you that you might use it constructively. That means that when you awaken in the morning, you realize you are in school. You have a chance to learn and grow. You do not have to drive anywhere. You're already there. Your very life. The universe is literally helping to assist you into having experiences that will bring things up for you so that you can choose to look at them differently. When you do that, you will be discovering the great power within you, the freedom within you to choose what you want to perceive and to elicit only what you want to feel. I want to feel joy. I want to feel compassion. I want to feel patience. I want to feel understanding. I want to feel this cherishing appreciation and gratitude for life. Then I need to start giving it away. So, to reread that paragraph, since it's so pivotal in this work, the universe is literally helping to assist you into having experiences that will bring things up for you so that you can choose to look at them differently. What's it going to bring up for me? My resistance, my sadness, my fear, my negative self-thoughts, my self-loathing. It's going to bring them up for me so I can choose to look at them differently. And when I do, I begin discovering the great power within me. It's that freedom within me to choose what I want to perceive and to elicit only what I want to feel. So it goes on to say, so even if nails are being driven through your hands, you're finally liberated in the power to choose only love and therefore to overcome the effects of this world. Having said this, please understand that each of your days, blessing and a gift, and if you use it appropriately, if you use it from the full commitment to awakening, you will live into the realization that every day is a blessing and a gift. Your day is chock full of a million opportunities to discover a deeper truth. Therefore, never feel that the purpose of your life must be something other than what you are involved in this very moment. For remember what we spoke of earlier. You are literally creating everything you choose, and nothing is forced upon you. Now, we're going to take that thought just a little bit deeper for a moment. It literally means that if you have decided that you want to awaken, you have already called to yourself every experience that can truly best serve your awakening. The friends, family, and people you have relationship with are those who likewise can best gain from the experiences elicited through relationship with you. It means that right here and right now, you are already demonstrating the power that you are seeking. Francis of Assisi says, when you go looking for God, when you go searching for the truth, when you say, I want to get closer to God or light or love, what you are looking for is what is looking. It means that right here and right now, you are already demonstrating the power you are seeking. This is the power to truly choose to awaken and to command the whole of creation to serve you in that awakening. Therefore, when you awaken in each of your mornings, look around. Who is that person sleeping next to you? They are your perfect companion. They are a messenger of God. For just behind your experiences, there is something deeper taking place. Because your mind is resting right next to the mind of the Creator when you first said as a soul, higher as soul, I want to awaken. I want to come home. When that happened, your Creator answered your prayer and began to send the thought through your spirit and through your soul to your conscious mind. Here's the thought, quote, I know how to direct you home. Give up this career and start that one. Move from this location to that location. Close quotes. When that happens, you begin to feel all manner of impulses. You begin to read different books. You begin to do different things. You might meet someone and fall in love. Is this all by accident? Hardly. When you decree a thing, it is so. I want to wake up. I want a better life. I'm going to change what I'm doing, and I'm going to pay attention to how I'm creating my experience. And then your life begins to unfold in a way that is not by accident. The very thought that you would claim as your own, from which you have created the world of your own personal experience, is also literally the result of your prayer to awaken. The Creator's mind, the Creator's thoughts are moving through you. There's a point in the book, The Impersonal Life by Joseph S. Benner, where he makes the point that no human being actually has true thought in their mind until they have awakened to the existence of the one creative mind expressing through them. Until that happens, people who are experiencing the movement of thought in their mind are just experiencing the bouncing around of negative conditioning of that intellectual mind that talked about in Chapter 2, where it said, you've been stuffing stuff into your intellectual mind like garbage in a garbage can. And all that part of your mind can do is spit back what's been poured into it. So Joseph S. Benner says, hey, look, human beings are capable of much more than they actually do because most of them have not awakened to the realization that they are being lived. There is a greater mind that they could have access to if they would stop trying to know and do and be certain things and ask to be shown. They can attune to an energy of a higher mind. So here's the paragraph in Way of Mastery that says, the very thought that you would claim as your own is really something coming from your Creator. And the Father is creating, the creation, the one mind is creating and assisting you to create just those experiences that will not be roadblocks, they will be stepping stones that carry you from where you believe you are to where your Creator is. To conscious awareness of your constant connection to the creative force. The result is that your ordinary daily life is the most perfect ashram, the most perfect study, the most perfect school you could ever be within. Your, quote, ordinary, close quotes, daily life is the holy city to which it is wise to make pilgrimage every day, which means to bring awareness and commitment to exactly what is going on in your life right now, exactly what you are experiencing, where you are experiencing it, to be thankful for it, to bless it, to embrace it, to be vigilant, and to be mindful. You might even want to ask yourself on a regular basis, quote, what is this moment teaching me? Close quotes. Having given this as a background and foundation, please remember, this is so important. You do not experience anything that is an ordinary moment. In each and every moment, extraordinary things are occurring. You are the miracle of life expressing in form. Extraordinary things are occurring in which the whole of the universe is conspiring. What does that mean? That means to breathe together with you. The universe is breathing with you to awaken you and to heal you. You might want to choose to trust it and love it, appreciate it, welcome it, allow it, and ask it to teach you. That these things are true, and I assure you that they are. What this means is that your life, the very life you are living, is equal in power and majesty and effectiveness to any life that has ever been lived. Now, if you don't slow down, you buzz right past that, and then you don't have to worry about how this would be blasphemy in many churches. But we're about something else in this work. We're going slowly. What this just said is worth repeating daily, multiple times a day. What this means is that your life, the very life you are living, is equal in power and majesty and effectiveness to any life that has ever been lived. Earlier it was talking about, what if I'm called to sweep the streets? And then my mind wants to argue about, but then how is my work ever going to get out there? And I won't be known. I won't be appreciated as this magnificent blah, blah, blah. Everyone who's sweeping the street has the same value as the highest spiritual teacher you could imagine. What this means, all of these things are true. I assure you that they are. And what that means is that your life, the very life you are living as you hear these words, is equal in power and majesty and effectiveness any life that has ever been lived. It means that your very life is equal to the one that I lived, for it is bringing you home as my life was my pathway home to the Creator. To build on that and to build on what I shared earlier, here is the third axiom or principle, and you could encapsulate it this way. Quote, I do not live any ordinary moments. With each breath, my experiences are the stepping stones laid before me of the Creator to guide me home. I do not live any ordinary moments. With each breath, my experiences are the stepping stones laid before me by the Creator to bring me home. I will bring awareness to each moment and allow it to teach me how to forgive, to dismantle any false perceptions, how to embrace, how to give out the energy of creation and love that I am, and therefore how to live fully in the moment. I will bring awareness to each moment. I will learn to allow it to teach me to dismantle any false perception or negative emotion, to see it as totally self-caused, and to see past it to the shimmering radiance of all creation expressing before me. In, as, through, and around me, life is expressing in this moment. And as I learn to do that more and more, I learn how to be the conscious presence of love and live life fully. So this is the third axiom. We're going to go back and read it again. This is just building on the first two axioms and the first few pages of lesson three. You I, anyone who's ever lived, has never lived any, quote, ordinary, close quotes, moments. With each breath, our experiences are the stepping stones laid before us of the Creator to guide us home. We can choose to bring awareness to each new present moment. We can choose to allow it to teach us in each moment. We can choose to forgive or actively dismantle any negative perception, any of the veils of distortion that would keep us from seeing the radiant, vibrating energy of creation which permeates every living thing. We can ask to be shown how to embrace, how to appreciate, accept, allow, and trust, and therefore live every moment fully. Third axiom. The book goes on to say, in your ordinary moments, 1,000 times each day, you will be confronted by opportunities to be disturbed. Oh, yippee! I get to be disturbed. I get to be angry. I get to be sad. I get to be scared. I get to feel hurt. 1,000 times each day. And in that very same moment, you're being given the blessing of an opportunity to choose peace. You're being given the blessing of an opportunity to remember to cultivate a perception of your brother or sister that is a perception birthed out of the Christ mind, not the egoic mind. How might you choose to view your brother or sister who just stole your stereo as a being of brilliance and light and understand that the actions they're putting out are not in line with someone who understands their true nature or who understands their great power to be in the world and create in the world everything they would need or want without being hurtful to somebody else? You see the shimmering radiance. You don't see the false perception. You don't see the judgment. You don't see the labeling. You don't see the prejudice. You see it with a perception that's birthed out of the Christ mind, not the egoic mind. Forgiveness, then, as a process of dismantling these false perceptions, can be practiced diligently. You don't have to, but you could. And as you do, it will have consequences. And you will not need to look too far. You'll not need to make a pilgrimage to some far city. You don't need to go sit in a cave in the mountain somewhere to discover your way back to creation, back to your awareness of your oneness with all of creation. Creation is all around you because you can only be where you have decreed to be. And you have decreed to be there because you, as a soul, truly want nothing more than to awaken. Your life, just as it is unfolding moment to moment, is meant for you. If this is true, and I assure you that it is, the way to awareness, direct connection to the Creator can only be found in your willingness to embrace and live fully the very life that is within you and that unfolds through you in each moment. The invitation here is to live in perfect safety, aware of your perfect safety, to live without fear, to go forward, to indeed trust and embrace the very power and the majesty that is the seed, the soil, and the ground from which your life's experience is unfolding. Your presence, your awareness as a being in form is precious, it is extraordinary, it is blessed, and it is the gift to you of creation itself. The invitation here is to embrace the blessing of your life and sanctify it. Keep it holy and recognize that your life is worthy of your respect. Your life has the same value as any life that's ever lived, been lived, or ever will be lived. It is not dependent upon what other people think. It does matter what you think. It does matter how you choose to interpret and respond to the experience of life, the gift of life that has been given to you. Beloved friends, your life, your very life is your way home. If you do not live it fully, how can you ever arrive at home? Therefore, embrace your greatness. Embrace the power that comes from being fully alive in your life and claiming its value. Embrace the first two axioms and the third axiom. You don't experience anything that you have not created. Live it full out with every bit of passion you can muster. Embrace every second of it that you can be aware to embrace it. Every time you wash your dish and your cup after breakfast, look upon these things and say, "Oh my God, this is my life. This is my pathway home. I'm going to live it full out. I'm going to own it. I'm going to appreciate it as the energy of creation expressing in form." Precious friends, in this way you will come to forgive yourself of the judgments you have made. You will learn to dismantle the false perceptions and judgments that you have been trained into. For who among you has not known the feeling of saying, "Oh my God, my life is just not worth very much. I'll never be like so-and-so down the street. I'll never have enough money. Not enough people are going to know who I am. When will my work ever get out as big as that person's work?" And on and on and on. But I say this unto you, every time you've judged yourself, you have weakened yourself. Every time you have judged yourself or another, you've slipped down the mountain another notch. And yet your desire is to be at the summit. So, to wrap up for today, I just want to come back and talk about the third axiom or principle. Right? The first two axioms are about how I am creating my experience of life. I have literally created this experience. I don't experience anything that I didn't choose at some level. Nothing limits me at any level or dimension of experience except that which I have chosen to believe about myself and the world. And the third axiom is, I do not live any ordinary moments. With each breath, my experiences are the very stepping stones that are put before me by the flow of creation itself to guide me home. I will choose to bring awareness to each moment. I will choose to allow it to teach me. I will ask to be taught in each new present moment. I will ask to be shown how to dismantle any false perceptions or judgments, move into allowance and trust and embracing each moment. I will learn how to live as love and therefore live fully. So there's the third axiom. We've got almost 10 minutes left. I will end there for today in the reading, and I will ask for comments, questions, refutations, soliloquies, 563-999-3581. We just ended reading. Anybody who's following along, it's the top of page 33 on Way of Mastery in the third lesson. 563-999-3581. How can we be of service to you? What's on your mind? How is this landing in the third lesson? I've had a couple people say that they were listening to the files that are on MindShiftersAcademy.org website, and they're listed there on the page that is titled Way of Mastery on MindShifters Radio with Commentary. And only one person so far has said one of the files they downloaded and tried to listen to was not of a good volume quality. So if you haven't had that experience, if you go to the MindShiftersAcademy.org website, whether you're there to find out about how to join us for our support group tonight, which happens from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central, or you're there to check out the Way of Mastery files on MindShifters Radio with Commentary, any feedback you have, if you experience a problem, is always appreciated. I was having a conversation this morning with Beatrice Birch. This is related to the On Your Mind podcast with Journey Stream. Beatrice runs a residential treatment facility in Vermont for people who have mental health issues, and it is a whole person creative based program that is designed to help people go through their mental health challenges with as little or no medication as they choose, and or to get off of medications if they've been placed on them by other programs or professionals, and to develop a set of life skills that help them navigate through the challenges of life and the challenges of mental health episodes. So I think it was in April of 2020 that I interviewed her the first time, and next week we're going to do a follow-up interview and find out what's new at Inner Fire Residential Treatment Facility in Vermont. Beatrice is a wonderful talent, trained in one of the more intense art therapies. She spent 20-some years working in Europe where they had all the same kinds of human beings and issues and problems, but they did not load people up with heavy psychotropic meds. They did art therapy. They did life skills. They did relationship building. They did other forms of therapy that helped people move through mental health challenges, severe ones, you know, psychotic episodes and racing mind and, you know, all of the usual stuff, deep depression, intense anxiety. But they did it without loading people up with medications that have so many effects that it makes it almost impossible to build a healthy life while on those medications. So that episode is available from, I believe it's April of 2020. And with luck, next week there'll be another one, or in a couple weeks. I'll do the interview next week. It'll take a week or so to get it published. But that's another resource for people, the On Your Mind podcast hosted by Journey's Dream. To find it, go to journeysdream.org/podcast. And there are 88 interviews there with people who do all kinds of different holistic, functional medicine, integrative medicine approaches to treat people. Also interviews with people who've worked their way through their own mental health challenges and come out on the other side having created a more loving and respectful life situation. And that's a free resource we're happy to be able to offer. And I'm working, although the technology seems to be resistant, to turn on the microphone for Susan. 610.
Hi, Dr. Tim.
Welcome.
Hey. Okay, you can hear. Good. Well, that was great, as always. Deep, wonderful. Now, this is probably a trying-to-figure-it-out type of question. But I've been having a discussion with a discussion with a friend about the difference between God's will and desire for us. Now, when Jesus was about to go onto the cross, he said, "Thy will be done." And it's always been hard for me to understand or accept that that was, it was God's will that Jesus be crucified. However, once he was crucified, it was God's will because it was. It is. But I just have always wondered, was God's desire something else? It must always be, I should think.
Okay. Let me just ask God and get back to you. I just as we've talked about before, you know, you do such wonderful work wrestling with these concepts intellectually and taking them literally, et cetera. And I don't always know how to respond to that because my way of making use of these, a practical use to help make my life better, is to not look at them literally.
Mm-hmm.
So if you read something like The Way of Mastery, what it says is, and he's already said it in the book in just the first 2.5 lessons we've read, he says, look, I made choices when I was on the planet. I chose to undergo those trials. I found teachers and said, teach me. And when they gave me a lesson, I had to decide, do I do the lesson or not? When they said, go into the desert for 40 days, I had fear come up and I had to decide, do I face the fear and go do it or not? But I arranged things. This is what it says in The Way of Mastery. I don't know if it's true, but it says, I arranged things in my life so I could be facing the most fearful stuff I could possibly face as a physical being on your planet as a way to demonstrate to myself that there's a lot more going on here than just the physical. So I chose that. God didn't choose that for me. God's only desire is that I wake up to the truth of my being in that sense, right? God's not like a puppet on a string manipulating so that when I go through the next intersection, no cars are running the red light. I'm on the planet, you know, just think of the first two axioms that we went through over and over again. I'm choosing my experiences. I'm choosing to show up and do the radio show 5 days a week. I'm choosing to maintain my private practice. I'm choosing to donate my time to the On Your Mind podcast. And if I don't like the results of it, I could choose again. I'm choosing to interpret the response I get or don't get in a neutral or positive way. And if I choose to interpret it in a negative way and I don't like the response, I'm free to choose again, to choose differently. This has nothing to do with the God making this happen. Now, it also says here in this second half of the third lesson that once I make the request to God, light, love, creation, and I say, I want to go home. I want to help. I want help getting back into touch with this constant awareness of my true nature, I can sit back and choose to look at everything that happens as part of the blessing of life unfolding in my favor. And if I look at it with love, with appreciation, if I look at it as, oh, these are the stepping stones to bring me home, this isn't a roadblock for me. This isn't a bad thing that just happened, this car accident. This is an opportunity for me to show up as love. This is an opportunity for me to live the example of being a human being who knows he or she is a being of brilliance and light expressing in form. And I can choose compassion. I can choose respect. I can choose patience, even as this person is ramming into my car or swearing at me because I didn't go through the red light when they thought I should.
Thanks, Dr. Tim. I tell you, I didn't give you enough time to do that answer. That was a pretty good stab.
Grateful for your calls, as always. I realize we're out of time, and Jeannie has just showed up on the board, so apparently she's ready to take over. So thank you for the call. Mm-hmm. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Thank you, Susan.
Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Thursday, February the 10th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I'll just remind everybody while we're waiting on Michael to dial in that this Saturday, day after tomorrow, is our monthly breath workshop. I'm going to be sending out right after the show the updated, every month for those that have joined for 3 months or a year or whatever, we send out an extended Mindshifters list with a new section of 13 Mindshifters. So whereas, typically right now we say pick a number 1 to 3 because there's 3 sections of the one on the website, and then pick a number from 1 to 13 because each section has 13 Mindshifters in it. And we have now added, we're up to the one that I'm going to be sending you, the 7th set. And so this is like a bonus that we send out to those who have joined the monthly group for 3 months or for a year or whatever. So you'll get the extended one. And I'll be sending that out later today so that you can do your mind shifter before breathing on Saturday. And then next Tuesday, which this Saturday is the 12th, and then on Tuesday the 15th, we do the support group, and that's from 7 to 9 Eastern Time. And we will be doing that then on Tuesday evening to follow up. So you all who are participating in the Mindshifter Still Point Breathing, watch for that email to come sometime shortly after the radio show's over. I'll be sending out the new list and reminding everybody of the Zoom links and everything. So if you haven't signed up for that and you want to participate in it, please get a hold of Michael or myself so that we can get that to you as well. And we appreciate you being here. Welcome, Michael.
Yes, we deeply appreciate you being here. It's a blessing and an awesome opportunity for us to expand our understanding of these amazing ancient tools that so profoundly impact and change people's lives. So thanks for being here. Thank you for lending your ears. How did that go, friends, Romans, and countrymen? Lend me ears. What did he end up with? But a bag of ears. That probably didn't work very well. Anyway, we're glad you're here and that you pass this along, that you make it available. And our objective is to offer the best support we can possibly offer in understanding and applying these tools in your life. This morning, Jeannie and I spent a part of our morning watching an interesting presentation. It was about a little over an hour. If you'd like, I'm working on an article on Course in Miracles, so I was looking for a piece that would integrate more about perception and what's being understood from the world of neuroscience. And so if you want to watch an interesting video, go to YouTube and type in the reality of reality, semicolon, a tale of 5 senses. And it's a group of, I don't know, 5 or 6 neuroscientists who are working in different arenas in the neuroscience world. And they're basically elucidating the bottom line of this work, that perception is a construct of the mind. know, listening to them for the full time, it's like, oh, I wish we could just get one piece of information to them, because they're talking about reality in several different senses instead of having the clarity that there's a thing called reality, the output of the mind, and actuality, what is. And unfortunately, they didn't have that word actuality. And I want to do a shout out to a man who's now deceased, but who ended up ultimately becoming a very good friend, a fellow named Bob Beck, who was a scientist. An amazing gentleman. Actually, several years ago, you've heard me talk about the fact that I used to keynote at a conference called Global Science. And 1 year, Bob Beck, as a scientist, was one of the presenters along with me at the Global Science Conference. It was interesting as I thought about that this morning and I shared it with Jeannie, I had a great deal of emotion and some tears come up as I was thinking about Bob. And he did his presentation, and this probably goes back about 25 years ago now. And as he did his presentation, he introduced me to the concept, which has become such a key in this work. Concept of reality versus actuality. And it was the first time that I had heard that as he presented from the stage. And having been on the, you know, been on the platform, it was easy for me to go over and introduce myself and say hello. And I reached into my pocket and I pulled out a $50 bill and handed it to him. And he looked at me kind of quizzically like, what's that for? I said, well, you just gave me a major piece of the work I've been developing for the last 25 years. He's like, well, what are you talking about? I said, well, you just use the words, not exactly in the context that we're using them here, but reality versus actuality. And that's a piece that I've been looking for. So thank you. And this guy, who's probably at that time 60, maybe 62, big guy, I mean, brilliant scientist, very well known in the scientific community, literally began to cry. Whew, brings emotion up again for me. And it's like, well, what's that all about? He's like, nobody has ever acknowledged my work before like this. Whew. Bob ended up becoming a very good friend. We actually met, you know, he traveled a lot, I traveled a lot at the time, and we met once or twice in Hawaii, you know, different places around the country, and spent a lot of time together over the following probably 8 or 9 years before he passed away. Several times we'd be on different panels or different speaking at different conferences. Anyway, just a shout out to Bob Beck. Thank you for that presentation that day at Global Sciences, where you introduced the concept of reality versus actuality, and to recognize that here we are as humans and we think we've got eyes that look out into the world. And this video that I just recommended, you know, the whole thesis of their presentation from several different neuroscientists, again, the name of it is, let me get back to the screen, The Reality of Reality, : A Tale of Five Senses. And these scientists haven't figured out that that reality is the output of the mind and actuality is what's actually happening in the world. And when we realize that our eyes have seen nothing, and the point they make in this video, Anil Seth, which we've talked about before, is one of the presenters, that the output of the mind, the world that we see, is seen by and through the mind. It's not seen through the eyes. You do not have windows on the world called eyes. I mean, everybody believes that. Well, I open my eyes and I look out into the world, and nothing could be further from the truth. You know, there are lots of creatures who have eyes. Do you think that the fly who's sitting on the pillow beside your bed in the morning when you open your eyes, do you think that the fly looks out and sees, and I look around the room here and I see some of our little pieces of art and I see some pictures from the kids and, you know, our television and the Avicen, and do you think that the fly looks out and sees that? Do you think a dog, if he were sitting beside you on the bed, would look at and see the things you see? In no way, shape, or form. Do you think a mosquito? A mosquito has senses for infrared. Different world. And the dog, the mosquito, the fly, and you and I see everything that we see through our brain, and what we see is a product of what's going on in our brain. Interacting with the data that's brought in through the eye, which is nothing but an antenna for light. Your eye is a specifically structured antenna that brings information into your brain through the medium of light. Now, antennas are one-way valves, generally speaking. In this case, information comes in through the eye in the form of light, is decoded in the brain, and then what is resonated in the brain, and the brain in this case is not your physical 3 pounds between your ears, it's your whole body, that which is resonated in your brain generates quite literally the world that you see. That is such an urgent concept to understand to really make sense of this work. It's like one of the first foundation points of this work is the world that you see, the perceptual constructs of your mind are nothing but constructs of your mind. Once you understand that, like you really get that, and you stop pretending that you're seeing anything outside of you or that anything exists the way you think it does, it's one of the points this video presentation by this neuroscientist, these neuroscientists makes, is that nothing exists the way you see it. And the way you see it is a product of construct in your mind. Once you get that, then you realize that being a construct, it might be false. One of the scientists in this interview, and I don't remember his name offhand, I have listened to some of his work previously, but one of the neuroscientists speaks about the fact that he uses an example, a metaphor. You have a Mac computer. So your Mac computer has, and he describes, I guess he's got a Mac, a blue icon with a, you know, letter on it, whatever it is, M or whatever it happens to be. And he says that's a symbol generated by the computer that is useful for you to get to your email. If you think that that symbol is your email, he makes the point, if you think, if you have to interact with all of the components of the computer, the biases created by transistors, by diodes, by relays, if you had to interact with all of that, he makes the point you'd never communicate with anybody. If you had to figure all of that out. And if you think that the symbol presented by the Mac computer is the email, then you're never going to be able to write emails. And if you switch over to a different operating system, and I just described some different operating systems, a fly, a mosquito, a dog, and a human. Each of them has a different operating system, and the operating system produces symbols. Remember the Course in Miracles talks about? You live by symbols, and for every symbol, you've created a name. And the name is a symbol of a symbol, and you think you've got the thing by the throat because you used a particular symbol of a symbol that has a meaning that you construct with your mind. And it's all foolishness. It's all ridiculous. And in particular, a notifier that your symbol is incorrect, that the construct of your mind is off base, is that hostility and or fear comes into awareness and is put into activity at the same time as you construct that particular symbol, that particular picture in your mind. When you realize that's all just the construct of your mind, and there's pain in you and pain from your generations, and that's another point that this particular video gives on Facebook with these neuroscientists, that what your mind is generating is completely and totally unique to you and actually is not designed, they talk about evolution, that evolution gave us this, and is not designed to accurately represent what the world is. It's designed to be useful to you. If in your generations pain and trauma were useful, there's probably a lot of it in you, and it's all false. When you realize that pained perception is a construct of your mind, and you start to realize that there's a way to collapse it and change it, you've now got, you've got a big one-up on virtually everybody who's ever lived on planet Earth. A few, a man named Yeshua 2,000 years ago, called these icons, these symbols of symbols, these perceptual constructs, called them appearances. He said, don't judge by appearances. If you do, you're in trouble. Because none of them is an actual representation of the actual world. They're useful to you. You know, it's useful to know that that little, you know, blue icon takes you to your email, but it isn't your email. If you have perceptual constructs based in hostility or fear and you buy into them, it will take you to your pain, to your hostility, to your fear, but it will compromise your intelligence and your ability to interact with the actual world as it is. So the basic thrust of this whole conversation is the number one order of business, if you are going to truly function as it's possible for a human being to function, if you're going to truly realize who you are, is you've got to get rid of everything that's false. Now, what do you call getting rid of something false in your mind? Well, I don't think there's a word for it in English. Vladimir Lenin, probably responsible for more deaths than any human being in all of history, said, the way you destroy a culture is to change the meaning of its words. 2,000 years ago, a man named Yeshua gave people a tool with which to change the constructs of their minds, the appearances that were based in falsity, and remove them. The tool was called forgiveness. You will notice, and I invite you to go and interact. You've heard me say it before. When I was writing my book, I went and sat in, I don't remember whether it was Kohl's or Barnes & Noble, one of the big bookstores, and I went to every book I could find that referred to forgiveness. Books written by priests, by rabbis, by ministers, by psychologists, by psychiatrists. And 100% of them, sooner or later, while they were telling their story, asked the question of their client, how did that make you feel? As though the symbol in your mind, in your body, called feeling, could be caused by someone else. And then they spoke about how, having, of course, been caused by someone else, the common belief, that you should be magnanimous and big about it and forgive them And with that act, forgiveness, the tool for removing perceptually generated pain and trauma and insanity, was removed from the earth. The ancient scripture said, there'll come a time when the whole world will be fooled. And the whole world, just take a look around at the pained perception of so many people, the rage, the fear, the willingness to literally go out and shoot and kill other people over it, to attack, to destroy, to traumatize themselves and others. For one simple errant change that was made. The process of forgiveness has been known and understood very well on planet Earth. 2,000 years ago, it was presented, and its meaning was a way to collapse the perceptual constructs of your mind that are insane, access the root energies behind those perceptual constructs, remove the energetic patterns that for some reason or other became generationally useful to your bloodline, remove those things and bring forward something that matched better with today's age where, you know, we're not living in the jungle, in the food chain, and we actually have an opportunity to live as we were originally designed to live, as true human beings. The best way that I've found to determine what a human being is just to go back to the moment where you held a newborn child, hold that newborn child, and tap into the essence of that child. Having asked tens of thousands of people all over the globe to do that exercise, I can tell you that 100% of the time, the answer has always been some variation on the theme of love when one describes the essence of the newborn. And to get clear, I further ask people who are experiencing that essence whether the newborn is loving them or whether the newborn is love. And everybody says, obviously, the newborn doesn't even know that I'm here, so the newborn is love. You may not remember it, but once you were a newborn, does that mean about you? That means that even if your world has given you perceptual constructs that are different than the truth about you, the truth still remains that you are the essence of love itself. That's what you are. It's not something you can get from somebody else. It's not something you can give to somebody else. It's not something you do. It's not something somebody's going to do to you. If you are looking for love in all the wrong places, looking for love in too many faces, thinking it's something you have to get from somebody else, then probably someone beat the love out of you, the awareness that you are the presence of love, whether they did it through perceptual battering or perhaps actual physical or emotional battering, and that became buried. It became buried under layer upon layer of icons of appearances that were false. And to be restored to the truth of who you are means that you're going to have to change your mind about a lot of things. There are a lot of things that have led you to believe lies about yourself, about the world, and about other people. Just because your perception generates it doesn't mean it's true. In fact, if your perception generates it, then it quite literally means that it is false. If you go to the Course in Miracles will tell you that perception is a skill made up by you to take the place of actuality. Of course, says it to take the place of what the Creator created for you in creation. How long do you suppose it's been since anyone on planet Earth realized that what they were looking at through their eyes was the result of a skill that they made up to keep them out of touch with the actuality of the creation that we live in? How long do you suppose it's been since somebody understood that? Well, you know, if you listen to, for instance, you know, one of the admired teachers that followed this man, Yeshua, it's a guy named Paul. And Paul, though he's considered to be one of the foremost teachers of Yeshua's work, Paul at one point said, "Why is it that things I would not do are what I do? And the things that I hate are what I do. And what I really want to do, I can't." Why do you suppose that was? How quickly, you know, Paul came along, if I remember correctly, about 6 years after Yeshua left the earth, or at least went through the whole scenario. Why do you suppose, what do you suppose he understood if he really, he knew what he wanted to do, but he couldn't do it? Why is it the things I would do, I cannot do? Because his perceptual apparatus would not support him, and he didn't know how to collapse its errant output. He didn't know how to forgive. Now, notice that there's a whole raft of concepts and fallacies when the word forgiveness is presented to anyone that are resonated into activity and form our perception of forgiveness. I've worked with people who've been involved in this work for 10, 15, and 20 years, and they'll still say things like, "But I forgave them." When you understand forgiveness, you will never even consider or conceive of forgiving anyone ever again. And many people will say, oh yeah, that's right, I have to forgive myself. No, you will never consider forgiving yourself ever again for anything. If it's appropriate, you may choose to pardon someone, to let someone or yourself off the hook for some perceived offense, but you will never again call that forgiveness. Because if you do, you'll think that when you let someone off the hook, when you pardon them, that you've forgiven, and then you'll never go and collapse and address the energy that underlies the false construct called perception that your mind is generating to keep you out of the truth of that energy in which you live, move, and have your being. And the energy in which you live, move, and have your being is the same nature as you are. It's love. And the interaction between the two, if you reduce it to do, and that's two, and that's just another trick of the mind, the interactive energy field of love, interacting, living, moving, and having its being in love, means that that's what's moving in us all the time. And that energy of love was what, because of the loud, emotional, raucous, raging voices of hostility or fear, that in the ancient teachings was called the still, small voice. When hostility or fear is active in you, that voice becomes invisible, impossible to hear. We're here to be reestablished in that voice, and to support you being reestablished in that voice, in that guidance system. And so, in essence, that's the bottom line of the work that we're here to do. That's the reason for this conversation, now having moved into its 11th year, to continue 5 days a week, an hour a day, 52 weeks a year. We want to create access to this conversation for every mind, heart, and being on the planet that's ready to do its work, and every mind, heart, and being on the planet that is not ready to do their work. Take it. Practical application of the tools available. So that's what we're here to do, and we're delighted that you're part of the process. Your questions, your experience, your use of the tools are imperative to the development of the tools. You know, one of the reasons why once we're finished the monologue, which I'm pretty much finished, is to go into dialogue, because, you know, what you're dealing with may be something that I've never even considered or conceived of in the context of this work. And so when you push one and ask your question, it opens the arena of whatever it is your life experience is, which I may not even have come close to in my lifetime. And you bring me close to it, and you open the space for it to be comprehended in the context of this work.
So we have a hand.
And so in the last analysis, okay, well, in the last analysis, that's exactly what we're here to do and to understand. And once again, Bob Beck, I shout out to you, my friend, whatever you're doing in the universe and the universes, that life is being good to you. And I look forward to hearing from you at some point. I invite you to be on our team, to have input to our process, even though you're not in your body anymore. And you are deeply cherished and deeply appreciated, my friend. It was a privilege and a pleasure to have time with you on the earth. And so, Miss Jeannie, we've got a hand. Let's say hello.
Yeah. And his name is Josiah 678. You're on the air.
Hey there, young man. Welcome.
Hello, Dr. Rice. How are you today?
I'm rocking, doing well. How about you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm getting there.
Fabulous. Well, how can we advance your process? How can we support you?
This might be a little bit of a long-winded introduction, but I think it's relevant. Okay. taking it back way back as a child, I originally grew up in a Catholic home, and then transitioned even as a young man at 12 to non-denominational church. Kind of questioned some of the processes there from Catholic, because I just I always had questions like, why, you know, why am I not praying to God? Why is a priest praying for me? Things like that.
Right.
A weird kid that was reading the Bible on the bus on the way to school, not because I thought it was the right thing to do, but because I wanted answers. I wanted to understand things.
Well, you got a leg up on everybody on the planet then. Two reasons I say that. You've got a leg up because your early education, though some of it may have been off base, depending on the individuals who were handing it to you, they were building the brain cells. And two, you had the inquiring mind that wanted it. So that's awesome. Great.
In my early 20s, I found myself as part of a very unorthodox ministry that actually did we went through the Course in Miracles. They were heavily involved in helping the homeless, those with addiction. We didn't go to a church. This was all ran out of homes. We would have Bible studies sitting around with anywhere from just a few people to sometimes 20, 30 people, various different families and friend groups. Transition a little bit later into my, you know, mid-20s and 30s. I was married, and we had three beautiful children together, and my ex-wife left. I found myself with three kids on my own.
What ages were they?
At the time, 13, 12, and 6.
So, what a handful.
It was challenging.
Was she engaged in the work and study that you were doing?
No. No, not at all.
No. Okay.
And then this is, you know, there was a lot of, I would say, things that were on a, like core principles of things that were seemed important to us that were very different. So didn't seem to be a whole lot of interest on her part in those things. And
right.
I'm not sure if that had anything to do with it or not, or we were just young and stupid when we got married and just maybe weren't right for each other. And so I found myself like 39, you know, three kids, single. And, you know, I prefer having a partner. I enjoy it. There's a lot of benefits to it. Not that I'm afraid to be alone, but started seeking out, you know, dating and things like that. But, you know, ultimately my end game was to try and find a partner. I had actually some coworkers of mine convinced me to stop using the dating apps because they're like, they're just garbage. You're just having nothing but bad luck. It's just not a good place. And I had some pretty bad experiences, so or at least lackluster or disappointing. But I deleted all the apps,
right.
And somehow with their algorithms, I had forgotten to like log out of one of them, even though I had deleted it. And I had essentially gotten a date request from a woman after I'd already sworn everything off. And I was like, well, maybe this is, you know, serendipity. I've got, you know, this, you know, nice lady, we're on the same age, she's got a child, I've got three, you know, we started dating each other and got along famously. I kind of noticed some things that were a little bit concerning about her behavior, her past and things like that, but I kind of wrote those off, and we got very heavily involved. We bought a home together. We were engaged, and things turned extremely tenuous and volatile very quickly after
Breathe.
Being together.
Breathe.
Yeah. Okay.
Breathing with you. Go for it. Let yourself breathe into that feeling, and you can let go perhaps for a minute of the story and being in your head and just let yourself be with what's moving. And know that you've got a whole community of people here supporting you in doing that.
Thank you. It was a very it was violent. There was a lot of physical and emotional, mental violence in that relationship. And through the feelings that I, you know, was experiencing of just like hopelessness and, you know, why is this happening to me?
That's the title of my book, by the way, if you didn't know that.
Yes, which is why I actually Googled that. This was back in 2017, I found your book. And
right.
I read through it, and it was just
you were Richard,
mind blowing. Yeah. In many ways, and it felt like a paradigm shift to everything I'd been thinking and taught my whole life, and at the same time, somewhat familiar. I would go through the worksheets pretty regularly to the point where I even had it memorized. I could actually go through it in my head. There were days that I was so distraught and so filled with rage or pain that I had to leave work, you know, just to kind of get by and go through the worksheet and in my head and sometimes written down, sometimes on the PDF on my phone. And I felt like I had gotten to a pretty good place of managing the pain, but it was more situational and in the moment rather than I hadn't put the piece together. This was a shift of my mind, like for my life. It was more as meant to, like, I guess I was looking at it as a remedy for at that in the moment rather than just
right
as a lifestyle.
Yes, and I hear you.
So the relationship kind of climax to an especially violent evening where I was attacked and bitten and clawed, and I'm not going to, you know, physically assault a woman who is, you know, 100 plus pounds less than me. You know, I'm 6'1",
right.
You know, 250 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, a lot of times I would just kind of take it and, you know, hold her arms back from, you know, clawing at me and stuff. And I kind of had enough. Ironically, she called the cops on me after the assault. They
right.
could tell that there was bad things going on. And so they just asked me to leave the home, for a few days until I could figure out what to do.
Right.
Thankfully, found a way out, left the situation. And at that point, it was, you know, physical safety, safety of my children. And
were your children in the home at this time?
Yes. Yeah. The two of them. My eldest had moved out by that point. It ended badly. I was trying to put the Aramaic forgiveness to application situationally. It did help, but I think I was so sometimes distraught in the pain that I didn't always use it when I needed to. Got
right.
to a place of peacefulness once I had left, and ironically had reconnected with my first love, just happenstantially, that I was with back in my, you know, early 20s, but before my
right.
even my ex-wife. We connected. We've been married now for a year. We're very happy. She's a blessing to my life and my children.
Sweet.
But I'm finding myself, I think maybe because of denial, and because I didn't continue to do the work, falling back into some of the pain and the anger that I had before. And I don't know why. It's not towards Jennifer. It's not towards my wife. It's not towards anyone in particular. A lot of times it's towards
right.
myself.
I know why. I know why.
I'm sure you do.
Because it's there. That's all. Just because it's there. And you haven't removed it yet. And the resolution is going to be in you committing yourself to taking on and doing the next level of your work of removing that. And, you know, it sounds like you've got a pretty connected, cooperative relationship with your wife, and probably inviting her, asking her for support. You know, I'm sure you've shared some of this, but letting her know that these things, you know, being straight up and honest, that you recognize it's yours and it's coming up for you and you would really like support in moving through it. And, you know, those energetic patterns sooner or later have to be dealt with. And the sense I get, and it sounds like perhaps with this relationship, you've gotten safe enough to be able to start to open those things that are there again for removal. And so the commitment I'd suggest that you make is, again, with the worksheets, the breath, and do your work and process through this. There may be, are your children still living with you?
My youngest does, and her daughter, my stepdaughter, does as well. So my son does, and her daughter. My eldest has two babies now, and my middle daughter, she's off to college, and, you know, away from home, doing fantastic.
So the child that's still at home that went through that with you might have some of those energetic patterns as well, and it might be valuable to invite that child into the process as well. And as a family, you know, these energetic dynamics tend to pervade the family, and when they do, the more people who are working within the family system on the healing process, the more the healing process accelerates. But you've taken in, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the power person dynamic that we speak of in our codependence work. Are you familiar with that?
I don't remember that.
Okay. So this might be helpful to see at this point. And it probably the relationship that you're talking about that was so traumatic, or the two relationships were traumatic, very likely are replicas, early patterns with a power person. And in this work, from our codependence workshop, we define a power person as someone who had more power over your life than you did, number one. Number two criteria to establish this power person dynamic is that they were not functioning as love. The number three dynamic that causes this to become part of our psyche is that we perceived the circumstance or the situation as survival. Usually that happens with a child, but what you've described in the level of violence that was in the home in that second relationship you described very possibly could have led to not just a reinforcement, but perhaps the establishment of a power person dynamic. Again, it usually happens with a child, but not always. It can happen to an adult as well. If those three criteria are met, this person has more power over you than you do, not functioning as love, and perceived as survival. When that happens, the child or the adult, if it happens to be an adult in that circumstance, if you think of that individual as and or yourself as an energy field, it's like the field just opens wide and becomes a sponge. And everything that's happening in the environment, if the power person dynamic were being established in those situations where you were being attacked and that strife was going on, the field would open and just pull all of that in. If that person was in pain, if that person was in rage, then all of the energetic dynamics of the pain and the rage literally are integrated into your energy field. In the future, once that's established in the mind, until it's understood and removed, it will run your life. And there are three basic behaviors that are possible once the power person dynamic is established. And the level of stress you're under determines which dynamic is in operation. I suspect, from what you've been telling me, that stress has been elevating, and that's why these old energetic dynamics are coming back to awareness. In essence, the three levels of behavior related to three levels of stress are: when there's no stress, someone who has this power person dynamic within them will tend to, there's a thing in the mind called the automatic decision system, will tend to cause one to select behaviors they used to get along with their power person. Once stress starts to build, then one will shift out of doing behaviors that did to get along with their power person, and they'll move into behaviors that they used to resist and survive with their power person. When one becomes ultra-stressed, then they'll do whatever their power person did to them that they hated the most. And from what you're describing, it sounds like you're somewhere between 2 and 3. The thing that causes stress to build and shift one out of, you know, usually the first level is a relatively pleasant, you know, way of acting and behaving, although for some people it can still be pretty traumatic, but tends to be relatively, you know, cooperative and sweet. And recognizing that whenever you set a goal, you create a stress.
Yes.
And it's the elevation of stress that causes a shift from, you know, what I did to get along to what I did to resist and survive to what they did to me that I hated the most, that I'm driven to do. And every time you set a goal, and it can be, you know, people think of stress as something bad or terrible or, you know, oh, this is such a stressful situation. But actually, you can have elevated stress, and every stress that you've got is a wonderful stress. But it doesn't matter. We'll still put one on edge to move from that first stage to the second stage to the third stage if the stress becomes too much, if there's too much stress involved. And stress, and I don't think you'll find this piece of information anywhere else on the planet, is caused by setting a goal. And if you remember, the worksheet is about canceling goals. It's a way of managing stress and reducing stress. So if you're finding yourself getting into arenas where these old pained realities are coming up, you've probably got so many goals on your plate that you've moved into that second level, perhaps touching on the third level. I don't know. You didn't really describe that. Picking up the worksheets again, reduce the stress so you can get back to that first level, and then being committed to, you know, I'm here to make a life change. This is not about, you know, I'm going to just manage this situation for today, but it's about really making a gut-level life change so that you function out of not level one, level two, level three power person dynamic. You've resolved all of that, but you function out of love. You function as a human being, no matter what's going on in the world. Because you know what causes stress in your mind, and you keep your stress at reasonable levels.
And that
so that would
sense.
Be my input at this point.
I have a question, though, and that is,
yes.
I fully believe that, you know, what you're saying about goals and collapsing them is accurate and true, because I've seen the effects of using the worksheet. But at the same time, I wonder, like, how can we do that and also exist and not have goals? It seems in some ways, like, some ways goals are good, you know, and in most ways, I would say.
Oh, they're awesome. Without goals, you couldn't live. They're urgent, awesome, necessary. But, you know, there was this teacher of psychology 2,000 years ago that made a statement that when you hear it from the Greek translations, it makes no sense whatsoever. When you hear it from the Aramaic, you go, oh, now that makes sense. Here's what he said, this man Yeshua. He said, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. Now you look at those Greek words and you say, what the hell? Sufficient for the day are the evils. It just doesn't make any sense. But if you go back to the Aramaic, the word evil, you know, it has two different meanings. One, it relates to archery. Like the word sin is an archery term, if you fired at the bullseye and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper yelled, sin. It just meant you were off the mark. If you fired at the bullseye and you missed the target altogether, the marker, the word that the scorekeeper would use to represent would be evil, like you missed the target totally. That's one translation of the word evil from the Aramaic. The other translation is unripened. I have a banana, and it's green. It's a perfectly wonderful green banana. There's nothing wrong with it, but in Aramaic, I would say this banana is evil. Nothing to do with that, you know, missing the target altogether. It just means it's not ready yet. It's not complete. It's unripened, incomplete. If I've got a really, you know, dark brown squishy banana, in Aramaic, it's evil. It's not ripe. It's not really, you know, ready to be eaten. Unless you're going to make banana ice cream, then it's actually pretty good. So this word evil, so when he says sufficient for the day are the evils thereof, he's saying don't have any more goals than for the next waking period. This is part of our Laws of Living class. We have a worksheet. You can go to the website and pick it up there. It's called the Mind Goal Management Worksheet. And it's a system for starting or ending your day by canceling all of the goals in your mind. Everything that you didn't get done today that you wanted to do, you cancel. Everything you can remember that you didn't get done yesterday or the day before or the year before or the decade before or the lifetime before that you can remember you didn't get done, you cancel it so you get rid of all your stresses. Then with that sheet, you frame your goals for tomorrow. Now, most of the world doesn't distinguish between framing and setting. Well, if I said, you know, tomorrow, you know, at 2 o'clock, I'm going to go and get the oil changed in the car. I've framed the goal. That's what I want to do. That's framing a goal. But I don't set it. I go to sleep stress-free because I haven't got any goals. But I did frame it. And in the morning, I look at and I've got a list of goals that I've framed. And those goals only include, this is the Mind Goal Management Sheet you can download free from the website. This list of goals only includes what I reasonably believe I will get done today. And in the morning, there's a section on this worksheet where you go through and you check off. You know, is this a good goal? Is this in harmony with love? Is this in harmony with my purpose? Do I still want to achieve this goal? And if so, then and only then do I set it. I purposely, consciously create a wonderful stress in my mind so I'll get the job of getting oil changed in my car completed. Goals are wonderful. But if I hold a goal, you know, Jeannie often talks about it. One of the things that Jeannie did, and I admire her so much for it, when we were on the road, she started a BA program and completed. While we were traveling, I mean, we'd be in 30 cities a year or between, you know, our summer intensive seasons at Heartland. And she, you know, graduated cum laude. I mean, it was awesome what she did. But she uses the example when she's talking about the Mind Goal Management Sheet that, you know, she didn't go out and set the goal to buy the books for her third year classes in the first year she went to school. I mean, she knew she'd have to eventually do that. That's part of the plan. I'm going to have to buy those books. But if she set a goal in her first year to buy those books for the third year, she'd be carrying a stress for 3 years that was of no use. It would be using up resources in her mind, and it would be – so when Yeshua says sufficient for the day are the evils thereof, he's saying just frame, and then the morning – you're going to achieve those goals, set those goals, and then at the end of the day, any of them you didn't get done, cancel them and go to bed stress-free and do the, and start to make that your routine. And so you goals, without goals, we'd be dead. I mean, if we didn't have the goal to eat, we wouldn't eat and we'd starve to death. They are very necessary. When you go to the worksheet, you don't cancel a goal because there's something wrong with the goal. You cancel the goal because when you load it in your mind, you access something inside of you based in hostility and fear, and what you want to do is heal that. So I cancel the goal. I've got this perfectly, you know, I've got this situation where I want somebody to just cherish and honor me. It's a perfectly wonderful goal. I should have that goal for everybody in the world. But this person's puking on me. And what I want to do is I want to cancel that goal because whenever somebody starts to puke on me, I go into terror. I cancel the goal because I want to heal my terror, not because it's a bad goal to have somebody to want to cherish and honor me.
Yeah.
And so once I cancel those goals, I reduce my stress. Now I move out of the power person dynamic level 2 and level 3 behavior and get back to level 1. And if I then, because of intelligence, not because I'm driven by pain, I choose to continue my work, I'll go through my whole energy field and clean out those old dynamics and be finished with it, become literally a person who functions totally and completely from the state of being that we call love. And we are down to just the last few seconds, so instead of doing an outro to the show, I'm just going to run the clock down and the show will cut us off. But that would be my input, and I suspect there's probably more conversation we could have. And if it works for you, let's continue this conversation tomorrow and see if we can get to the next level.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you, Doctor.
Delighted. Absolutely honored and delighted to be here to chat with you, and I'll look forward to talking with you tomorrow. In the meantime, we'll be holding a space for you to breathe and maybe dig out those worksheets. You know, we've got an app. If you go to your app store, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. Do that search. You can do the worksheets right there on the app. So appreciate you. Blessings. Delight to connect.